Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Remember the sound?
Oh, God. That brings back memories.
Yep. Little dial-up internet for you, folks. Yep. Remember waiting for it to click into gear? Maybe you'll get on the internet. Maybe you won't.
Jor?
Yeah.
You still have an AOL account, don't you?
Why are you judging that?
I'm not judging. I'm just making conversation.
You've got mail.
That's right.
You've got mail.
Yes, I do. I do have mail. And it's funny. Every time I open my email and the sound is up on one of the computers in the newsroom and you hear this.
You've got mail.
Like Adam Carter rolls his eyes. They all laugh out loud at me because it is fairly ridiculous.
You've got mail.
I mean, right?
Hey, would you visit my MySpace page when
Stop
you get
judging.
A chance?
Here's the deal. AOL is free. It was my first ever email account.
So is every other email on the planet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nobody pays for email, Jordan.
First ever email account. It still works great. People remember it. It's unusual. Then they judge me and I yell at them. But it's functional. It's perfect. I have clothes that are way older than my first marriage that still work and function perfectly that I love. So don't judge me. Don't judge
me. Sure.
What?
It's the internet on training wheels. And it was perfectly fine in 1998. No, you do what you have to do.
We completely digress. The rug, the money, all of that stuff. Paul, what we were talking about was email. People are inundated with it. It is actually a source of massive anxiety. When you go in the morning, you log onto your computer, you look at your phone, and you have 100 emails. And you think, how am I possibly going to get through this today? Our next expert is going to help you through it. Jan Lehman is a productivity expert. She's been on the show before, and she's going to help us how to avoid drowning in our email. Jan, so happy to have you back.
Yeah, good to have you back. Thank you.
I mean, hundreds of emails. You can see why this would be a source of anxiety, right?
Oh, yeah. You're lucky if it's only hundreds. Most people have thousands.
Do they really? Do people really have thousands of emails?
Well, a lot of people don't. They use their inbox as a reference file, and they save like every single email in there, mixed in with emails they still need to respond to. And yeah, many are up to like 10,000 in their inbox. It'd be very stressful for me.
Okay, so
Hey, Jor.
Go ahead.
I have 22,205 emails.
Why?
In my five email accounts.
Why do you have that many?
But I have to keep them for legal reasons. So some of the stuff I can't easily delete.
Well, Jan, can you help him? Because that does not sound
helpful.
Please.
No. Well, so first off, one thing I'll say, Paul, you were kind of saying this to Jordana about her AOL account. You know, if it's working for you, it's fine.
Yeah.
But often we find there's a lot of issues. But what people don't know is it's just as easy to search for emails in folders on the side as it is in your inbox. So a better strategy, if you're up for it, is really to use your inbox more like a to-do list. Mm-hmm. And any of those emails that you're holding on to for legal reasons, so you don't need to do anything, just move them to a side in a folder on the side because you can search there just as easily.
That's a good point. Hey, Jan, I'm curious. My dad used to say growing up, he said, touch every piece of paper on your desk once. In other words, take action immediately. Don't put stuff off to the side. Either act on it or get rid of it, toss it away. In the age of emails, how do we take that lesson to bear? Because all of us are drowning in email.
Yeah, no, it's a good analogy, and that's a typical analogy in the organizing world, which is the foundation of productivity. It's touch it once; that's the most efficient way. Some of our emails, though, are like mini projects, right? So it's not something we can necessarily touch once. But the idea there being, some people spend way too much time on email, and some people don't spend enough time, and you kind of want that middle ground where you really do have to allocate chunks of time to sit and do email. And when you're doing that, definitely when you read it, like, just get it done. Don't like put it off till later if it's a quick task. if it's a mini project, you don't really have the mindset to get, you know, your head around it at that point, that's totally fine to wait on that. But for the most part, processing email, yeah, ideally you'd sit down and really, you know, go through a chunk of emails and get them done.
Jan, you, with your clients, you also say, you know, it's really not an email issue. It might be a management style issue. So how do you help your clients not only clean out their inbox, because we all know how to do that, but also avoid the 22,000 emails in the future? What's the root of this problem?
Yeah, you know, it's really funny. I often get hired by senior leaders and they're like, I don't know what's going on, but I know there's a lot of dysfunction. And then I'll say, well, what do you think's going on? And they'll almost always say, well, everybody has too many emails. And that's why I always say that email's a symptom. And so, yeah, often there's lots of things that could be going on there. One, it could be that somebody could be really good at managing email, but they don't know how to delegate work. And so they haven't really assigned responsibility to people in their organization so that they can be the point person for the conversation and then just loop management in when necessary. So often when I coach somebody and, you know, we've made them a really good time manager, a really good manager of email, and they still have too many emails, we look at delegation is kind of the next thing. We'll also look at things like, you know, if they're too controlling or perfectionist, you know, are they just trying to be too involved in everything? We also look very hard at what they should eliminate. One of my mottos is prioritize your work, eliminate as much as you can, automate everything you can, and delegate as much as you can. And so people are really just holding on and expecting that they can do way more work than is really possible. And so often we get into a coaching conversation. You know, if this email's been in your inbox for 6 months, you know, chances are it's never going to be a top priority. So just get rid of
right.
it.
Yeah.
Hey, Jan, I'm an observation and then a question. I'm probably as passive aggressive as everybody else. I'm a manager. I have people that work with me in the two weather companies. And I find it, and it's kind of lazy on my part. It's easier to shoot off an email than it is to ask a question face to face. In the back of my mind is, oh, this will be faster. I've got 20 things to do. It'll be much faster for me if I just send an email, and that way there's also a written record. So if you could address that, and then what to do on vacations. I've noticed, you know, do I carve out some time on vacation to try to answer urgent emails? Otherwise, when I come back to 500 emails. So it seems like there's, you know, a no-win situation there.
Yeah, so as far as the vacation one, I'd tell you really a super simple answer that people don't often think about is if you're going to be gone for a week, your first day back in the office, you shouldn't have any meetings, and you should expect that you're going to be doing a ton of emails. And certainly there'd be things to do before if you could, you know, delegate authority to people to handle things, but people are just unrealistic sometimes, and you can't expect to be gone for a week and come back and go back directly into your regular day-to-day of back-to-back meetings and all of that. So just a strategy of always blocking a day to get caught up on email is good.
Okay.
And then, Paul, what was your other question? It was about you being a manager and, people are quick to just push out emails. Yeah. Yeah. It is such a simple tool, and so people abuse it. And so one of the things you want to start doing is think about kind of the ripple effect, that if I start this task, this conversation via email, is this the most effective, or is it going to cause confusion or hurt feelings or this horrible ping-ponging of emails back and forth? And so one of the things to think about is, you know, what type of conversation is this? If it's negative or in any way a sensitive conversation, absolutely that should be face-to-face. 85% of what we communicate is through our body language, and so you don't want to do it via email where you can't see the person's response.
Right.
If it is a discussion or a complex topic, that should not be done via email. That should be done in a meeting, and people don't know how to run meetings these days, so they tend to do the wrong thing in the wrong space. But you can certainly start a conversation about a complex topic via email, and I'd recommend it because many people would prefer to have some information ahead of time, have a chance to read it and dissect it. But don't expect them to respond to the email. Ask them to schedule a time for a conversation. Communication's a huge hurdle in business, and putting email between two people makes it even more of a difficult thing.
Jan Lehman, productivity expert. Jan, give us your website for people who want to reach out.
Sure, ctcproductivity.com. CTC stands for Circle the Customer.
Circle to Customer, ctcproductivity.com. Jen Lehman, thank you so much for joining us and for
thanks,
the great
Jen.
Tips.
Yeah, thanks. Have fun. Have a great weekend.
And thanks to all the people that called in and said this is what they hear every day.
You've got mail.
Because how many calls did we get, Dan Cook?
You got two.
You've got mail.
One person who also has an AOL account is apparently getting charged to have an account.
What?
Yeah. And the other person is talking about transitioning away from it, and AOL doesn't have the functionality to auto-forward messages from the AOL account to his new account.
Wow.
So he's upset about that.
Well,
hey,
he should never leave. That's why, because it's perfect. Yes, Paul?
Can I borrow some of your 8-track tapes?
You've got
maybe
mail.
Next week.
You know what?
Just bring in your 8-track tapes.
You know what?
And
you're a jerk.
I have a theory, though. In heaven, there is no email.
Yeah,
hell
probably right.
Is nothing but email, all spam.
Amen, brother.
That's just my theory.
That's the truth. I think for weather therapy, I think it's time we need an actual therapist because this is a problem.
You're right.
This is a problem.
I'm getting tired. I'm not a therapist.
All right. Paul will try to get us through it on weather therapy next. It's 4:25 and it's crappy outside. Back to you.
It's going to get better. It has to get better.
I guess it will
get better.
Yeah. I mean, it could start snowing and that would be worse.
It's not going to snow. Can't believe I'm saying that in late May. But skies are going to clear out this evening. And 2 out of the 3 days this holiday weekend should be really nice. Tomorrow and especially Sunday.
Great.
Should be really, really nice. So those are pretty good odds for a holiday. And I know the perception is it tends to rain more on holidays, right? That's the perception.
I don't know. Is it?
Well, a lot of people come up and ask me that question. Paul, why does it rain more on holidays? It doesn't. It's just that more of us are outdoors doing stuff outside at the mercy of the elements. We're more weather sensitive, weather aware when the weather does go to crap. Then we notice it as opposed to when we're indoors doing errands, work around the house or, you know, in school or in the office. And, you know, we're not living the weather the way we do on a big holiday. Anyway, tomorrow and Sunday look nice. Monday, some of the storms could be severe. Speaking of severe, Jefferson City, which is the capital of Missouri, if anybody asks Jordana, and EF3 went right through the heart of Jefferson City, Missouri, a couple of nights ago. Winds estimated at 160. It was on the ground for 50 miles. Which is amazing. 80 minutes this thing was on the ground. The Weather Service did an incredible job warning of this tornadic supercell storm that came into Jefferson City. And you should see, I mean, the damage is unbelievable from this thing. Mm. No deaths, which is nothing less than a meteorological miracle that nobody died in that tornado. So kudos. Tip of the hat to the Weather Service and also to local meteorologists on the scene in Jefferson City who prevented a real catastrophe. Seventh wettest spring on record for the Twin Cities. Meteorological spring, which started back on March the 1st. And the Great Lakes are getting even greater, Jordana. Mm-hmm. The water levels are going up. 3 of the 5 Great Lakes are at or above record high water levels for May. Again, heavy snow, that melted, and that flushed a lot of water into the Great Lakes, and now these heavy spring rains. So it's always a little foreign to me, bizarre. I get the river flooding, but when the lakes start to flood, it just makes me scratch my head. Anyway, Lake Superior is 183.8 meters above the previous record May average of 183.7 meters back in 1986. Superior is so high, Jor, when there's a northeast wind blowing toward the city of Duluth, the water is pushing upstream against the St. Louis River, and that's flooding boat landings and docks well away from the lake. So, kind of bizarre, but again, the springs are trending wetter, and certainly this spring is no exception. Mm-hmm. At some point, people are panicking, and I have run into people, Jordana, that are already kind of shaking their heads and writing off. It would be premature to assume that we're going to have a lousy summer. We're going to get some 80s and we're going to get a few 90s. Don't panic.
90s, 80s, my goodness, I can't even imagine that that's like going to be a thing for us. I'm hearing rumors about a cold summer. But you have good news, 2 out of the 3 days for this holiday weekend. So
yes.
You know what? I'll take it.
That's pretty good for a holiday, 2 out of 3. We should all be so lucky. But so we'll keep you posted. And I know you and I are both working on Memorial Day. There may be some severe weather in the afternoon, and I'll certainly be keeping listeners
Excellent.
Up to date if there are any watches or warnings.
Amazon wants your body. They'll give you a gift card if you give them your body. Hear more next.
My body.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
So would you sell your body for a $25 Amazon gift card?
Depends if I'm having a rough day.
Amazon is enlisting participants. You're a cheap date, my friend. Amazon is enlisting participants for an image study in New York. In exchange for undergoing a 30-minute digital 3D scan, and I don't mean digital the way you think it means.
There's no probing.
There's no probing.
Okay, 30-minute
digital scan of their bodies, volunteers. They're volunteers. They receive a $25 gift card. Photos, 3D scans, and video of study participants, both clothed and in form-fitting swimwear, are taken per the sign-up page as our height and weight measurements. Amazon says the data is for internal product research only. Research being conducted by Body Labs, a 3D imaging company bought by Amazon. So $25 if you let them scan you. No, thank you very much. No, thank you.
So that's so the clothing fits better?
Yeah. I guess because they said, you know, they can image right down to wrinkles. They can add motion, show on the model, show how fabrics move. I guess maybe you could put in your size and they'll, you know, they have an image of a person the same size, shows how the dress looks on you. But no, thank you very much. You pay models for that. No, thank you.
That makes sense because that's one of the reasons why, you know, a lot of people still go to retail stores when it comes to clothing, right? They don't trust ordering online. Hey, George, swoosh me. There we go. Thank you. Hey, we've talked about flying taxis.
Yeah.
And it's getting closer. Ordering up a flying taxi through an app, a German company plans to make flying taxis that you can order up on your app, just like Uber, a reality in the next 6 years. Munich-based startup Lilium unveiled a 5-seat electric air taxi prototype. The Lilium jet, which conducted its first flight earlier this month, part of an app-based flying taxi that the company expects will be fully operational in cities around the world by 2025, so roughly 5-6 years out. It's battery-powered. It can travel 186 miles on a charge in 60 minutes and will connect cities throughout a network of landing pads. Commuters will be able to book rides from their nearest landing pad through a smartphone app. Lilium did not reveal how much it will cost, but claims it will be comparable in price with regular taxis.
Really?
Which,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Can you imagine?
No, I cannot.
How cool is that?
The owner of a rowdy beaver is going to prison. That's really all I have to say about that. I just wanted to say that.
And we're done.
That's pretty much it. The rowdy beaver is a bar, and the owner was sentenced. See, the story just gets less interesting as I read it more. The rowdy beaver, the owner was sentenced to 3 years in federal prison for failing to pay employment taxes for about 4 years. The tax loss was anywhere from $500,000 to $1.5 million. So the owner of the rowdy beaver going to prison. And you're probably thinking, why is the bar called the Rowdy Beaver, Jor? Well, it's named in part for its proximity to Beaver Lake, Beaver Dam, the town of Beaver. Rowdy Beaver opened in 2006, and it's in Missouri. Just wanted to say.
Of course it is.
Just wanted to say it.
Isn't Missouri the show me state?
Show me. The Rowdy Beaver's doing that. Not showing them the tax documents, but they're showing everything else.
Oh.
You're up.
Okay. So from flying taxis to a hypersonic airplane that is in development, how'd you like to go from New York to London in 90 minutes?
Well, that's cool. Is it going to hurt my neck? Because that seems like it's going to go real fast.
A lot of whiplash. Not sure I want to get to London that bad. But a U.S. startup has revealed plans to develop a plane that will travel at 5 times the speed of sound, Mach 5. So we could go from New York to London in 90 minutes or less.
That's fast.
Hermes Corporation, based in Atlanta, said it has obtained financing from seed funders and private investors to develop this plane that will travel at Mach 5. They have some heavy hitters on their team. It could revolutionize commercial transatlantic flight. Currently, air travel between London and New York takes more than 7 hours. The creators hope the aircraft will be capable of a range of 4,600 miles. Get this, George, it's going to move at 3,300 miles an hour. Right now, the planes move at about 550 to 650 miles an hour. A lot of difficulties. It's going to have to fly up around 60, 70,000 feet above the ground. Many difficulties in flying that fast. The plane burns a lot of fuel. They're shooting for a one-way ticket price of about $3,000, which would be comparable to a first-class ticket today going from New York to London. But somebody's going to figure that out. And you remember the Concorde?
You're
old enough to remember the Concorde. It's kind of sad that that fizzled out, but somebody's going to dust it off and do it better. You wait.
That's right. Surely you've heard the song Bittersweet Symphony.
Stop calling me Shirley.
There you go. That's
the wrong. That's the wrong song.
Oh, that's not it. This it was. Remember, it was in the 90s. The band The Verve had a big hit with Bittersweet Symphony. Now, what you may not have known was that the song has been embroiled in a copyright dispute with Mick Jagger and Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones, who have been collecting royalties on that hit for more than 2 decades. Well, Verve lead singer Richard Ashcroft said this week they signed over their publishing, all of their publishing for Bittersweet Symphony, which was a truly kind and magnanimous thing for them to do. So from now on, Ashcroft will collect all of the song's royalties. The dispute revolved around a borrowed song sample, but that was awfully generous of them. There we go.
There we go.
It is a great song.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a
cool.
Good song. Might have been the only hit the Verve had. I don't know if they had any more hits.
They were pretty much a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And somebody else wrote it. But I guess Mick Jagger and Keith Richards are like, you know what? We have enough money, so we're good. So maybe you can have this money from this song. So pretty magnanimous.
So every now and then somebody will break into a home just to clean it.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know
if
you saw this one.
I would like that to happen to my home a lot more often, please.
Did somebody break in, just tidy things up?
I'll leave the door open.
Nate Roman, 44 years old, lives in a single-family home in a typical suburban tree-lined street in Marlboro, Massachusetts. He says it's possible he forgot to lock his back door because whoever entered his house didn't break anything to gain entry, and they didn't take anything. They just thoroughly cleaned his house.
Nice.
Nate looked around, saw that they had neatly made the beds, vacuumed all the rugs, scrubbed the toilets.
Wow.
They even crafted ornate origami roses on the toilet paper rolls in his bathrooms. I love it when they do that.
I love that.
Every room in his house was cleaned except for the kitchen. Ronan says he still doesn't know who did it. The best theory he could come up with is that maybe a housekeeping service mistakenly went to the wrong address and showed up at his house. We should all be so lucky, huh?
Yeah, wouldn't that be a treat? But wouldn't they have expected a check to be left there? You know?
Well, you'd think, but why? But they cleaned every house except for the kitchen. Usually the kitchen is the roughest spot, right?
Yeah, weird. Anyway, I'm still hoping for them to come to my house.
Yeah.
I have no problem.
Any day.
I'll let them in. It's also 4:45 right now. That's a Wicks and Jewelers time check. For exceptional jewelry and only the finest Swiss watches, visit Minnesota's luxury jewelry store, Wicks in Bloomington.
Paul and Jordana and the Twins machine just keeps chugging along. 16-7 yesterday. Again,
unbelievable.
Completing a 3-game sweep against the Angels. And what's amazing, 8 home runs yesterday. That's apparently the second time this season they've hit 8 in a game. I believe they did it against the Orioles last month. But this ties an MLB record for the number of times a team has hit 8 home runs in a single season. And it's only May, Mike Max. What is going on? And can we keep it going?
I just came from Target Field, and I asked Rocco Baldelli a little bit of that. I said, have you ever seen anything like this? And he had a really good answer for me. He said, well, I don't think it's ever been done. So
that's right.
No, I haven't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How could I have ever seen anything like it if it's never been done before?
Right.
Yeah, that's a happy clubhouse to be in right now. Miguel Sano was all smiles when I talked to him today, and Buxton and Scope and the whole group there. There's a vibe that you feel when you walk into a clubhouse or a locker room. And generally speaking, if you've been doing this for a while, if you stay there for any amount of time, you can kind of tell how that team is doing. And the Twins have that vibe right now. Guys are getting there. They're giddy. They're teasing. That's what you always look for. If they're kidding each other a lot, that usually means things are going well. And good chemistry, I think that's overrated, especially in baseball. When you win, I always said that the reason people think you have good chemistry when you win is that the guys that are sitting on the bench don't have a beef. If it's not going well, then you've got an answer. You say, you need to play me more, then we'd win more. But if you're winning, no one can question anything because you're winning, and that usually creates good culture.
Hmm. Hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
They do this one more time, another 8 home runs, and they're going to have a record.
They're going to smash right now. I mean, if it continues like this, they're going to have the all-time record for home runs in a season in the American League, mm-hmm. I think Major League Baseball. But the Yankees set that last year. So that kind of tells you, the way that baseball is trending. But still, to be that, they could set it like by Labor Day if they keep going at this pace.
Unbelievable.
Hey,
Maxie, I want to shift.
Hold on. I just want to remind everybody, 6:30 pregame, they open a 3-game set against Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, and that's important to note because they're back to 7:05 start tonight.
Right.
They played some at 6:40.
No more West Coast games.
Yep, and they were at home playing 6:40 games, too, there for a bit. And I think they are again next week, but tonight is 7:05.
That's right.
Hey, back to the whole the St. Thomas story. I saw Scott Van Pelt. He was one of several who unloaded on Mayak for kicking out St. Thomas. So, I mean, this is getting national exposure. At the end of the day, is that going to change anything, Maxie?
No, and most of the national guys have zero idea as to how this is constructed, how it went down. It's just an easy fodder for them because that's a real simple bullet point. Team wins too much, kicked out of the conference is kind of the way they're reading this and diving into it, which to an extent is true. But there's layers to this. There's a lot of things that go into this, and you're not going to change anything. St. Thomas now has to decide what they're going to do next, and I would think that they try to be in a scholarship conference and go into Division II, which would eliminate probably them playing St. John's again, whereas if they stayed Division III. But it's about teams that need in that conference that need to step up and make more of a commitment to be competitive for sure. That's a part of it. And St. Thomas does benefit from a huge enrollment. That's for sure. That's for certain. They have more numbers. And as I've stated before, that also means you got good coaches that want to coach there. So it creates its own phenomenon, so to speak. So it's kind of complicated and layered. I know a lot of coaches are upset in the MIAC because they say, we look like wimps now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're fine playing St. Thomas. If they're good or they're not good, whatever it is, we're fine playing St. Thomas. We don't want to look like, hey, I'm going to take my ball and go home. Yeah. This is a complicated, and it's not as simple as, well, they're winning too much, so we kicked them out of the league.
Let's talk a little bit about softball. Gopher softball hosts LSU and the NCAA Super Regionals.
Yeah, goose eggs right now. They're 0-0 after a couple. Amber Pfizer pitched out of a jam. LSU pitched out of a jam. LSU's kind of built like the Twins. They hit a lot of home runs. So if you keep that at bay, you got a chance. And so they're playing today right now as we speak, scoreless in the third. They'll play tomorrow. And then if game three is necessary, that would be on Sunday.
We are going to mention, we're going to do a little segment on this Joe Maurer brouhaha in the Star Tribune. We're going to talk a little bit about the article that was written about him and the Twins. I know we don't have time to talk with you about it, but that's coming up in our next segment.
Sounds good, guys. Have a great weekend.
Any quick thoughts
too,
in the
Mikey.
15 seconds we have on that, Mikey?
Which part? The Maurer thing?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people, you can look at that and spread it out. You still got to pick the right people when you have the money.
That's right. Yep. All right, Mike, thanks for the thoughts.
Yeah. You bet.
We are going to talk with Henry Lake about that in just a few minutes. I know that our own Corey Heppelow was super fired up about that article that sort of was not kind to Joe Maurer and his money. We'll talk next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.